You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What a weekend. Danilo Gallinari is an Atlanta Hawk. Bogdan Bogdanovic is not a Milwaukee Buck. Gordon Hayward headed to the Charlotte Hornets. Christian Wood headed to the Rockets. Jeremy Grant and nine other big men headed to the Detroit Pistons. A lot of big money thrown around, a lot of player movement, and I don't think we're done yet. But most importantly, guys, Jay Crowder is a Phoenix Sun. Chris Paul is a Phoenix Sun, and we will break all of that down for you. Do not go anywhere. I am your host, Brendan Kleen. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. Follow the show on Twitter at LockedOnPHXSuns. Follow it on Instagram at that same hashtag. And subscribe to the show. Subscribe wherever you listen. Follow us on Spotify. Be right here with us because this week has proven the NBA is back. The NBA is its normal, crazy self again. And I don't want you to miss any of it. So lock in, lock on, follow us, subscribe to us, and let's go through this together. What I want to talk about today on the show is that Jay Crowder signing and some of the other business the Suns were up to this week. Want to talk about what comes next a little bit, recorded about as late as I could. I'm recording at 9:30 on Sunday night here, Arizona time, so no update really on Dario Saric yet. We just saw Aaron Baines go to Toronto and some other signings. So I want to hit all of those. I want to hit what comes next, and I want to take some of your mailbag questions because a lot of you were nice enough to toss some questions my way on Twitter. So if you want to, again, be part of the next mailbag that I do or hit me with anything, I really try to be pretty interactive on there. I think most of you will agree. So at, like I said, at Locked On Phoenix Suns, or Locked On PHX Suns, if you want to get the at name perfect there. But let's get into this. We found out on Saturday around midday that Jay Crowder of the Miami Heat previously, but really of about half the league at this point, is headed to the Phoenix Suns. 3 years. It was listed at $30 million. It's more like $29.1 million, just for all of you very technical people out there. That is the deal. The full mid-level exception that the Suns had to use, which I broke down in several situations for you guys last week, over 3 years, which I think was maybe the surprising part there. But let's start with Crowder, and let's start with what it really means to go get him, which to me is that the Suns got one of the best, maybe the best. I'm not thinking of anybody particularly better off the top of my head that is more of a sure thing for what the Suns needed on the wing than Jay Crowder at that price. Of course, look, like Brandon Ingram, yeah, you guys can try to convince me Brandon Ingram's leaving, but we all know he's going to stay a Pelican. He's going to get a maximum contract, and that was really never up for discussion. So, you know, considering what the Suns needed, which was more of a rotation piece, not a star player. They have Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges. They have a few big men that they're going to tinker with. So they were only going to be playing with this mid-level exceptions. I think Crowder is about as good as you're going to do there. And you can quibble with, you know, could they have split up the mid-level exception? Could they have, you know, we talked about maybe they could have held this trade up with Chris Paul and had more cap space. And then, yeah, you're probably looking at a different tier of players at that point. But all things considered, based on what we knew heading into the night, heading into this weekend that the Suns were going to have at their disposal, I think they did about as well as they could getting Jay Crowder, because the number one thing to me, we all know what he is, right? 3-and-D player, very, very physical, tough player, and can play either forward spot, which is going to be really important for this team. But the most important thing to me is that physicality, is that he's versatile. But like normally when we say versatile, we talk about like these athletic guys, Draymond Green, who's actually kind of similar to Crowder in some ways. We talk about like a crazy athletic guard like, you know, Russell Westbrook can do all sorts of things on the court. He's a very versatile player. We don't normally say that about somebody like Crowder necessarily, who's not an explosive athlete and not really very long even, but is he's so strong. You know, we saw him really do a number as part of the Heat's defensive game plan against Giannis Antetokounmpo including being like the man-to-man defender on Antetokounmpo sometimes. You know, the Heat were very swarming and overwhelmed Giannis when he got into that half-court situation. But Crowder was a big part of that and a big part of why he was able to corral a 7-foot, like, tarantula alien man who plays basketball for the Bucks is that he's strong. And Giannis had real trouble with that. So that's a recent example, but that's been who Crowder is for his whole career. And that's something this Suns team was missing. That's something that their wing rotation was missing. That's something that without guys like Aron Baynes around, guys like even Ricky Rubio and Kelly Oubre to a certain extent, is that sort of physicality in their game. Rubio, I think, is sort of underrated in terms of how he can do some of that. But Crowder, in that specific way, is a match made in heaven for this roster. And I think that's a lot of the value that he'll provide, is he's just so different than what they had between Cam and Mikhail at that spot, that I think he's going to be very unique in their rotation. He's going to allow them to defend multiple positions more easily when he's on the floor. You can trust him to switch probably like 2 through 5, 2 through 4, pretty comfortably. He knows the league. He's a veteran. He knows his role. Obviously, you know, he understands coming here what he's going to be asked to do. I think all of that is pretty a sign for encouragement. On the negative side, though, I will say, and I tweeted this, it's going to be a through line with a lot of the Suns signings, because look, they were operating with the mid-level exception, and not only that, they were operating with it against a lot of other contending teams like the Lakers or the Bucks, who had that mid-level exception also. And you're not probably going to convince players to come to your team when they can go to those teams and be more likely to win a championship, potentially play in a more appealing market, like I said, the Lakers, of course, very attractive. Montrezl Harrell, Marc Gasol, both going there. Wes Matthews going there. We saw the Lakers effect in full force. So Crowder's about as good as they can do. I keep coming back to that. I really do think so. But on the negative side here, let me just say, like I said, that was the train of thought I was on. Thank you for bearing with me. I waited late at night, but you know what that means. Occasionally gets a little bit wonky. The negative, he's not like an eye-popping advanced metrics type of player. Like, he just isn't, and that's fine. Because again, we're talking about free agency, where you're going to overpay for talent, maybe relative to what they normally would sort of be worth. You're also having to sort of outbid other teams. And look, guys don't become available if they're great, you know, for a reason. Like, players don't hit the open market if they're particularly valuable. So you're going to be getting guys who are sort of in this thing, in this tier. It's a backup type of player. Maybe Crowder starts. We'll get into that, obviously, as we preview the season. I don't really know where I land yet between him and Cam. Probably Crowder starts, but you know, he's a part of a rotation. He's a 25 to 30 minute type of player, most likely. And that's what you're getting. You're getting a guy who, like, just to pick one, box plus minus last year, he was, for the Heat, positive 2.5. But for the Grizzlies, where he played 45 games before that, was a minus 1.2. Overall on the season, minus 0.1. So basically like an average player. Some of the other advanced metrics are a little bit harsher on him, but that's basically what he's been for most of his career, is about average, give or take. He was really, really good in 2015-16 for Boston, shooting really well from three, if I remember correctly, 34%. So really, it seems like his defense was the key there. But he's streaky, very, very streaky shooter. Even within a series, you know, if you watch the finals, you saw him not making a ton of shots. In Memphis, he only shot, 29.3% from deep. Then in the regular season in Miami, he goes on to shoot 45% from deep. Then you get to the playoffs, and this is a guy who went back to 34%, which is about his career number, 33% career in the playoffs. And let's see what he's at for the regular season in his career, 34. So that's below average. Like, just be realistic here. His volume is very good. He's going to make people pay if they leave him wide open. He is going to take shots if they're there. Take some, potentially some bad ones as well. He's a guy who takes weird pull-up threes and things like that sometimes. But again, for what they got, I do think Crowder is a very good addition. Somebody who, even the fact that he wanted to come here is worthwhile, worth noting, you know, shows that the Suns are turning the page as far as being in a decently attractive situation for guys. And I think he's going to really fill a role that was desperately needed on this team. And play it, make a real impact. I mean, that's not something you can say most of the time. We saw so many overpays and so many questionable decisions. The Suns got a guy who makes a ton of sense, paid him what he was worth, and they're going to be much better for it. Let's get into the rest of the signings and what comes next here in just a second. But before that, I want to tell you guys about the sponsor of today's show, which, as always, is Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever, and they are new and improved. The Built Bar is back with 6 new flavors, and they're even more delicious than the last. That's caramel brownie, cookies and cream, carrot cake, almond crisp, apple, a ton of delicious, unique flavors, as I always love to tell you guys about. And guys, I just placed an order for Built Bar, so I'm not just making stuff up for you. I really, really love these guys. I love the product. I'm tired of Kind Bars. I've just been shoving Kind Bars in my mouth for so long. They're not very, doesn't feel like they have a lot of protein, whereas Built Bar has 19 grams of protein in the peanut butter, 17 grams of protein in the cookies and cream, very low on sugar. They really make the flavor come out, and I'm not even sure how, because they are not fake, artificially sweetened like so many of these are. They are delicious, they are natural, and they taste like a whole bunch of fun stuff that's not normally on the market there for you. So like I said, I just placed a variety order, a dozen pack. I don't even know if that's going to be enough, because when I buy these, I always end up scarfing them down really quickly. They are the perfect workout pick-me-up. They're the perfect in-between meal snack. They are perfect for whatever you want them for. Not too light, not too heavy, not too light, right in the middle, and perfect of a mix of protein and sugar, not too much sugar and enough protein to get you through. Really, can't go wrong at all. I love these. Like I said, could not be more excited to buy my next order. And I was able to take advantage of this offer as well, because I have not purchased in a while and started up a new one. What you're going to do to take advantage, just like I did, is go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, LOCKEDON, locked on, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Again, promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. And for a limited time, a free cooler is available to those who act right now. We are back here. I wanted to break for you guys down the other signings that the Suns made. If you did not notice, the Suns did not just stop at Jay Crowder. They retained Javon Carter on a 3-year deal worth just over $10 million. They signed Damian Jones, the Hawks and Warriors big man, a late first-round pick a while back, athletic guy who really took it to the Suns a few times. I think that maybe stuck out in their memory when they went back through the film for free agents. And Etuan Moore, a 1-year contract for Etuan Moore, 2 years for Damian Jones, both of those at the minimum, although Etuan Moore makes just a tiny bit more money there because he is a veteran, so his minimum is a little bit more expensive. All that out of the way, I want to talk about how those guys fit. First of all, go to my Twitter at BrennanClean14 or search Forbes for my article on Javon Carter. I was rereading that, and not even to pat myself on the back, it's not even about the story, it's about Javon. Reading that story back again, the impact that he made in at West Virginia, the impact that he made on so many of the people that I was able to speak with, including in the Suns organization, he is exactly the type of guy that the Suns want to reward. You could make the case to me that maybe Devin Booker, of course, in terms of work ethic, improvement, mentality, is the sort of poster boy for what this locker room aspires to be, what James Jones and Monty Williams want to build it into. But really not that far behind Booker, in my opinion, would be Javon Carter. He works harder than anybody I've ever covered. I've covered this team for, this will be my 4th season. I've never seen a guy scrap and work and bust his butt as much as Javon has since the moment he got traded to this team. And so it makes a ton of sense why they would work to re-sign him as quickly as they did, why they would not waste any time letting another team come sweep in and try to give him an offer sheet because he was a restricted free agent, and why they would even, you know, I'm not going to say it's an overpay, because I think a lot of players got paid way more who are not necessarily like that much better than Javon Carter. But, you know, even then, even still, considering they didn't go out and let him get an offer sheet or anything, he only is getting paid just over $3 million a year. It's just slightly more than the minimum, you know? It's not a heaping salary. So it's reasonable, but it's also a sign that they didn't just pay the minimum or didn't make him go get that open market restricted free agency offer sheet, and they went and got their guy. And I think that that's because of the work that he put in, the improvements that he made. I mean, again, just to go over it for people, this is a guy who took 102 three-pointers as a rookie at Memphis, or in Memphis for the Grizzlies, and shot 33%, made exactly one-third of those shots. Took 146 during his second season, obviously with the Suns, and made 43% of those shots. And that in and of itself is such a sign of the improvement. He also improved from two-point range. He improved from the free throw line. He has clearly become a better shooter. And on top of that, still creates steals and gets after loose balls, hustle plays, those types of things, more than anybody on this team, really. So it makes a ton of sense to me why they would re-sign him. I do think he'll play a role for this team next season. They didn't, as we'll go over, get a, you know, star-level backup guard type of guy. So it looks like they'll roll with Carter in a pretty prominent role next season, just like he had in the bubble. That said, let's move on to Etuan Moore, who's a fairly similar part of the rotation. I do expect Etuan Moore to play for this team. He sort of quietly, because nobody paid a ton of attention to the Pelicans since Anthony Davis left, and nobody necessarily was paying attention to Etuan Moore when he was on the floor during the Zion Williamson show. But he's a player who is pretty ideal for what the Suns need. This is a team that hasn't had a backup for Devin Booker in a long time, I guess since the season before last, at the very end when Tyler Johnson came in. But he was even more of a, he was more of a guy who played next to Devin Booker. They really have not had a backup for Booker that was capable of filling that role. And now with Carter and Moore, they have two guys who are a little different, Moore a little bit bigger, and a guy who did size up at times during his run with the Pelicans playoff teams. So he's a guy who can defend threes a little bit here and there, especially on bench units. If he, you know, if he's a starting three like he was in New Orleans, he's going to be overmatched. He's not going to go out there and defend LeBron James, but against backups, sure. I mean, he can defend two through three, twos and threes, and some ones. I mean, he's obviously a little older. He's now 31, going to turn 32 during the season. So it's not as if he's an incredible athlete at this age. He never really was. But yeah, I think you could trust him to play some pretty solid defense. Just going through, again, defensive metrics, he was a little bit negative for the past three seasons in New Orleans. So not a guy you want to trust to be some sort of like lockdown Mikal Bridges clone on the wing there, but a guy who can play. If he's asked to play 10 to 15 minutes, knock down some threes, defend some backup guys, and be some insurance if Booker gets hurt or if Booker, you know, has foul trouble or whatever. Like, it's just a more trustworthy piece than anybody really the Suns had at that spot last year, you know. Javon Carter included, who very much proved himself over the course of the season, but was no lock to even be part of the rotation when last season started. So nice depth piece there. Damian Jones is the other one here I wanted to go over. Just 2-year minimum. I mean, whatever. Right, it's not that important. I don't think he's going to play. I would think that I would think of this one as about the same as the Cheick Diallo signing at the minimum last year. A little weird that it's 2 years, although we haven't heard, at least I have not seen, if the Damian Jones signing has an option. Let me check. I think actually Gambo might have said something here. Hold on. Nope, nothing from Gambo. It looks like, basically, we know it was a minimum and not the biannual exception. That's pretty clear to me. I wasn't thinking they would pay him that $3.6 million number for the biannual exception. So nothing really important there. If he plays, it's probably because there have been injuries. But at the same time, he's not not a bad, I guess, idea for somebody you can potentially deliver. He has pretty good athleticism and is a player who, sure, you know, worth a shot. Probably already spent too much time talking about him. 25-year-old guy. Let's see if he gets better. Lastly, let's cover Dario Saric's free agency here. Gambo has been steadfast all throughout the week that they expect to re-sign Dario Saric. John Gambadoro said they would be okay with a multi-year deal for him, which is important, although not necessarily surprising. If you're trying to sign a restricted free agent, they can just take the qualifying offer if they wanted to play just one season, and that would allow him to become an unrestricted free agent next year. I don't think any indications have been given that that is the case, so expect a 2 or 3 year deal most likely, and Dario Saric will be back. I just don't think anything has really suggested otherwise. I mean, the Hornets used up their cap space on Gordon Hayward. Atlanta used up its cap space now, not only on Danilo Gallinari and Rajon Rondo and Chris Dunn, but they also used the last of their space to sign Bogdan Bogdanovic to an offer sheet. So like a 15 or 18, $18 million offer sheet for Bogdanovic. So the Hawks don't have much cap space. The Pistons used up all of theirs on all those big men, including Jeremy Grant. The Knicks have some cap space, although they're using it up kind of little by little here. And it seems like they're probably the front runner at this point for Russell Westbrook, and that will eat up a good chunk of the money that they have to spend. So I would expect that there's just not much of a market left for Saric, especially on a multi-year deal. The remaining thing is really salary. And that'll be a matter of, you know, how much are they willing to spend him. You saw like Chris Boucher from the Raptors, who was a restricted free agent, far less accomplished than Saric. He got about $7 million, I think, from the Raptors to back up. Who is their star? Aaron Baines, of course. Aaron Baines. Boucher will be backing him up. Baines himself got the full mid-level. Tristan Thompson got the full mid-level. Montrezl Harrell got the full mid-level. That's probably the market. I know it wouldn't be the mid-level exception for Saric because he, you know, the Suns already have him on the roster, so he would just be money that they're able to spend kind of over the cap. They can spend him, they can pay him however much they want to. They could give him a max if they wanted to. It's not going to happen, but just so people understand. I would imagine Saric probably goes for, because he's a little younger, because we tend to just see restricted free agents get overpaid because at least of the threat of going out there and getting an offer sheet, and teams don't tend to want to play hardball. We just saw Malik Beasley get $15 million a year when there was really no market to get him off of the Timberwolves, and somehow he ended up getting a ton of money. So, look, I would just expect that we're going to see Saric back for somewhere around $10 to $12 million, 2 to 3 years, and I think both sides will be pretty happy with that. Becomes a nice trade chip if you need him to be with that middle salary. We talked last week about how after the Chris Paul trade, the Suns just didn't have a ton of those. Saric would be one of those for them, as is Will Crowder, and that's pretty nice to have. So, let's go to your questions right after this. Back here answering a few of your mailbag questions. Thank you guys so much for those. Of course, really appreciate them. Fun way to involve you guys in the show. Like I said, throw me anything, anytime. And if it's something I can incorporate into the show, I will. If I can answer it real quick on Twitter, I totally will do that. My email address is in my Twitter bio, my own Twitter at BrendanClean14. So if you guys prefer that method, if you don't have Twitter, anything, I'm always down. We answered, let's see, somebody asked about Dario Saric. That was Tim Fennell at St. TLF. We talked about Saric, so that will answer your question, Tim. Let me go back here. So many. Aya, we answered your question about Morin Jones. Here we go. At Suns While, talking Suns While Online. Nice tag there. James Jones has done an amazing job adding depth to this roster. Now that things are mostly settled, which position has the biggest drop-off between the starter and the bench pieces? And he said, besides the one and the two, where Booker and Chris Paul will play, obviously. So between the three and the five, I think that's interesting because it kind of depends on what you see Jay Crowder as. I think he's going to play mostly four, but I also think this is a team that's pretty big, so you could see Crowder playing the three sometimes. If you have a lineup of, let's say, you know, Crowder, whatever it is on the guard spots, but in the front court, Crowder, Saric and Jalen Smith, or Crowder and Saric and Ayton, I think that could happen. So it depends on which spot you see. I'll just kind of put those forwards into one, and I think that's a pretty good threesome. I think you want a little bit more depth, and that's just going to kind of be the situation. I think you could see Devin Booker playing some three this year again, just like he did in the bubble, as part of like a three guard thing. So I think that's pretty locked down with Crowder. I would say to me it's the five, because I think of Saric as a five, but I think with the way that this roster is shaping up, they're going to have to play him at the foursome because they can't be, like, think about it in the bubble. Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges were both playing 35-plus minutes a night. That's just not a way to handle your rotation in the regular season. So Crowder will help, but Crowder, you know, playing 25 to 30 minutes, that still doesn't quite get you all of the 96 that you need to play between the two forward spots. So I think Sharj will play the foursome. I think Jalen Smith will play the foursome. That means one of those guys is going to need to play the five. And that's where it starts to get weak because I don't love Jalen Smith as a five right now. Especially, I mean, he's just a rookie in general. You don't want to rely on him too much in the first place. You don't even really know what you have in him yet. Sharj is a good option there, but again, we'll play the four. DeAndre Ayton, of course, awesome. But he's the starter. We're talking about the drop-off from Ayton to the bench. So it's the five for me. Damian Jones, I really don't think is somebody you want to rely on. I don't think he's a guy who you really want to be playing. We'll see. Gambo says that he expects them to play to sign another guard. We'll see. Etuan Moore might have been that guy. That might be all we see. It doesn't look like there's a ton of players left who are really worth that biennial exception. If there was somebody at the big spot, maybe. JaVale McGee seems like he's a guy who could be either bought out or able to be traded. He ended up in Cleveland because the Lakers had to dump him. So maybe that's an option with the Suns. They could use a few of these end of the bench sort of contracts to get there. I don't really love that idea necessarily. Let's see, what other questions do we have? Joshua, you asked about the projected rotation. I think I sort of just went through that a little bit. I think adding Moore was really underrated, in my opinion. They probably can add another guard, add like a Langston Galloway if they want to. That could be for the biennial exception. He's a guy who you could see playing some real minutes if they were able to get him. But even then, I mean, you have Carter, Moore, Campaign, and let's say one more guard. Let's say it's Galloway, whatever. That's pretty solid. I mean, you already have two guys in Paul and Booker who are going to be playing pretty substantial minutes, even if Paul's a little bit behind because of his age and you're trying to bring him along. So I think that's pretty solid. And then the five that remains to be seen, they'll probably just have to make it work. I think Smith's going to play a pretty big part in that rotation, to be honest with you. Let's see. At Zeebold 97, that's Dieter Zeebold, asked if you have a chance to bring Isaiah Thomas in as a third guard, do you do it? I think the Suns have shown an unwillingness to re-sign their old players. That's something I want to get into at some point this week. You had De'Anthony Melton, Josh Jackson, Derek Jones Jr., all changing teams right after TJ Warren had his bubble outburst, his breakout there. So they don't seem to want, not that they could have re-signed TJ Warren, but just as an example, we know that they really prioritize getting rid of the guys that they felt were sort of lingering flotsam from the prior regime. And I don't see them doing that. I mean, this is all like Markieff Morris is on the market. I don't think that's an awful option. He's a little bit more of a four once again than a five, but he could fit with somebody like Dario Saric as like a 4-5 combo, Jalen Smith. But I don't think that's going to happen. And I don't think I really would necessarily want it to. I don't have a ton of respect for just how those guys handled their side of that situation either. But again, I just think it's probably not going to happen. Isaiah Thomas was not pleased with his time here, pretty clearly. If the Suns are the only chance for him to stay in the NBA, I could see it. Other than that, I just don't think that's probably going to happen. Let's see. Randall Richardson at RMRich12 asked, is there a young current player that would be a great fit and realistic as far as point guard of the future? Yeah, I don't think they found that guy, plain and simple. I mean, they don't seem to have loved anybody in the draft enough to take a chance. Kyra Lewis, player like that, they didn't do that. Nobody, you know, they traded Ty Jerome, traded Jalen Lecque, who's not probably much of a point guard anyway. So yeah, I mean, I think that remains to be seen. It's going to be something that they target. They're not going to get that guy now. The bottom of the barrel here in free agency is not going to get them that. I would throw a couple names out there though. Kai Bowman, a guy who shot like 60% in the restricted area last year and played pretty solid defense for the Warriors. He's a little undersized, I suppose, really more of like a single position type of guy at the one. But he's a young flyer I wouldn't think would be too bad for the Suns if they can get him at the minimum. The Warriors cut him. So Shaq Harrison, another one, a little bit more of like a wing. He's not much of a playmaker, as we all remember. So not so much of a point guard there, but an option. Let's see, a couple more questions before we get out of here. Yeah, Randall, though, I don't think they have that point guard of the future right now, and that'll be something they have to target. Let's see, floor and ceiling comparisons for Randall. From Randall, once again, for Jalen Smith. Floor and ceiling for Jalen Smith. I don't know. He is a really unique player. I mean, I think he's the type of guy that we just haven't really seen in the NBA a ton because it's such an unusual sort of period in the league. Like a 3-and-D combo big man is not really something that the NBA has seen so much lately. I think Serge Ibaka is the obvious one. He doesn't have quite the timing and understanding of like older Serge, prime Serge Ibaka. But that's probably, I mean, that's the comparison I think I've seen thrown around the most. Let me see. Well, who did, Kevin O'Connor did not have comparisons that will make anybody particularly happy in Suns land, but let me see who he had. Yeah, also had Kelly Olynyk and Thomas Bryant. Thomas Bryant is a really good comparison, actually, in my opinion. I think Smith's a little bit of a better athlete as far as his leaping ability and stuff, but that's probably what you're looking at in terms of what I would say is like a baseline for Smith. Randall had Jaren Jackson as a ceiling minus the ball handling. Maybe. I think Jaren's a pretty unreal talent. In terms of he can hit threes off the bounce, he can hit threes off like crazy movement, he can do more with the ball in his hands, as you said, minus the ball handling, okay. I don't see Jalen Smith being a switching defender the way that Jaren Jackson has the potential to be, and he's also not quite as long as Jaren Jackson, so I would not say the ceiling is quite that high. I'll have to think, though. I'll have to think back on the ceiling. We can get back to that one. But I think that closes off the questions. Thank you guys. We got to a lot of them organically. You know, we had a lot of questions about the free agents they signed and everything, which of course I went over. At Grappling Gila, I would say, let's circle back on your question. Which teams got better and worse this offseason, and where does that leave the Suns? I think with the Warriors getting worse here with Klay out and things like that, it's going to be a really fascinating topic, and one we'll get into plenty as we preview the season. But thank you guys all for listening. I like going solo with you guys. It's fun, and the mailbag would definitely help. So thanks for helping to produce the show a little bit. Again, follow us at Locked On Phoenix Suns. Hit that subscribe or follow button wherever you're listening, and we'll have some great stuff coming for you guys. We'll have Jared Dubin of 538. Hopefully, he's agreed to come on the show. We just need to figure out when, and probably looking back at some draft stuff as well. I know Spencer Perlman, who's been on here before, is a guest I'm trying to lock down as well. So do not go anywhere. We'll be right here with you. And until tomorrow, have a great one.